What's up, ladies and gentlemen? You now entering the Daily Wave, hosted by Mr. Christopher Green himself. On me, I'm just a fellow truth speaker. I go by the name of Doctrine. Welcome to the Daily Wave, starring Christopher Green, alternative media king, preaching truth on the screen. Sometimes he gives it to you calm, sometimes he's causing a scene. But one thing, you're not getting this on the mainstream. Economy, politics, and societal woes, he's got it locked. Just keep your eyes locked in on the show. If you want the spirit side, YouTube, Doctrine of God. And for more insight, it's greenwave.com. The Green Wave, he makes my burgundy
cheese. Yeah, let's get ready for the Green Wave. Hey, I'm Christopher Green. We are back. This is Green Wave Radio Live. I'm here with Vinny Eastwood. We are also taking calls around the world. McConnell tells Obama to back off over court. And again, I was talking about this earlier, where Obama is strong-arming and really positioning himself in the light of a dictator regarding this health care bill. It's insane, isn't it?
Oh, man. The overreaching power of the executive is something that just warms the cockles of my heart. So I just love seeing tyranny this time of year.
Me too, Vinny. I just love it. And for all of our listeners, too, I'm also going to be on Vinny's show after this hour. So you can just stay tuned on American Freedom Radio and we can kind of continue the discussion. Vinny, what's new with you? What's been going on? I've been catching a few of your clips on YouTube. What's new?
Well, you know what? The days are starting to blur together, to tell you the honest truth, Chris. You know, everything's starting to kind of be a bit obfuscated and confusing and a little bit stressful. And you research into all this stuff and it kind of starts to freak you out just a little bit and your priorities get shifted a little bit. You know, should I do the dishes or should I interview somebody who's exposing copious quantities of scumbaggery? And then you've got to deal with the undone dishes. And it's just this whole balancing, juggling act of frustration. Yeah. How do you survive such BS, I wonder? Well, normally people have a few laughs. They look on the lighter side of genocide, just like me. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. And that's basically the point of my show. And basically, I've only just now realized and coming into a phase after nearly doing the show 2 years, right, that I've suddenly become the madness and the chaos that I sought to release people from.
Yeah, well, I can see that. I mean, sometimes, again, you got to, you know, as you're going through the news and what's happening, you got to separate the fluff from what's real. I mean, you keep digging further down the rabbit hole. You know, I was reading here, I don't know if you caught this, Vinny, but, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, he's vowing to strike back at those attacking Israel, saying Sinai has become a terror zone. There was a rocket fired on a lot. Okay, and he says we can never stop fighting terror. Supposedly, this was perpetrated by Egypt, another country that the United States government has funded their insurgents to topple, to destabilize it, so that these same people can go ahead and bomb Israel. See how that works there, Vinny?
And now it's also in a supreme military dictatorship with less rights and freedoms than the people enjoyed before under the CIA-backed Mubarak. Because the military were trained to do what? Well, yeah, that's right. Protect the president.
Pretty much. So what's going on in New Zealand? What's the perspective over there? I mean, we're, in my opinion, total chaos in America. We're not going to get out of this debt crisis. What's
bad
going on
news
there? Yeah?
Yeah, it's all bad news down here, man. We're getting in debt like something around $400 million a week out of a country of 4 million people. Yeah. Right, our former prime, our current prime sinister, rather, is a former head of the New York Federal Reserve Bank. He was the head for 2 years of European bonds and derivatives market, derivatives which played a key role in the financial crisis, if I'm not mistaken. So who better to lead the country into absolute disarray? Now, what's on the cards this year, and what they've already done, is pass what's called a search and surveillance bill, We're up to 70 different obscure government agencies, including such things as like the Pork Board, the Apples Board, etc. They'll all be able to do this, including police and social workers and everything like that. They can break into your house, install cameras, surveil you for up to 3 days without a warrant or any judicial oversight. They can arrest you, hold you without charge, and you no longer have the right to silence either, and you no longer have the right against self-incrimination either, and so on and so forth. It's just substantially, scientifically designed to destroy everything that we thought was once free and or private. That is already passed. But they're not going to start using it right away, of course. No, 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 no. You see, the uproar off of selling the state assets off and amalgamating close to a million people in Auckland City and stealing $28 billion worth of public assets in a local council roundup. They just said, hey, look, you've got all these different councils. Let's just put them all together and salvage all those assets and put them into a private holding company, which we, the elite, own. And how does anybody supposed to get any representation now? We used to have our own 7 different mayors. Oh, well, we're only going to have one mayor and his hand-picked unelected cabinet to rule over you.
Yeah. Well, we talk about that. Yeah, I know, Vinny, we talk about that all the time. It's that constant revolving door of politician back into big business. Politician. And that's why none of these people turn each other in. It's why none of them are prosecuted. None of them go to jail because, again, they're all in bed together. I don't know if you caught this. There's a new troll bill for trolling that can actually put you in jail. In fact, Topher Morrison, one of our writers on greenwave.com, did a story on it. He says Arizona has done it again, taking a break from targeting illegal aliens. House Bill 2549 takes aim at a new minority in America, trolls. At least that's how Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and the Media Coalition, one of the biggest critics of the bill, sees it in its current form. According to the bill's sponsors, the proposed legislation is intended to amend older laws dealing with stalking and harassment over the telephone, not censoring the internet. So for any person, this is a quote, with intent to terrify, intimidate, threaten, harass, annoy, or offend, to use any electronic or digital device. It says under this language, an iPhone fart machine or any number of hair pulling applications could be punishable for up to 25 years in jail and land you in Sheriff Joe Arpaio's tent city. And there's this guy named Sean Duffy, 25, who's the son of BBC comedy writer, got his kicks off finding online memorials and leaving behind malicious taunts. So basically, he was trolling, you know, websites like Facebook, et cetera. I'm not endorsing what he was doing, but he actually served, 18 months in prison as a result. So think about that for a minute. You comment on a YouTube video or something like that, or you're trolling, you're now a criminal, punishable by the law. You could actually serve jail time over this.
Well, that's pretty rough, man. I think that a lot of the commenters on my videos would probably fall under that bill.
That's what I was thinking. And, what, are they going to round up everybody? I mean,
what quantifies annoyance as well? Because truthers who come at people with the truth is like, say, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. Whatever this video is about, it's useless. Go to suchandsuch.com. There's no real difference, I think. There's no real difference because it's all in perception, because that's what this law does. It basically puts people's perceptions of annoyance and radicalizes them into a crime.
Yeah, well, it makes everything a crime. And again, this is all about control and controlling this new technology platform, which is liberating people.
You know about that lady, Anne Rand? She said something that there's so many laws getting passed that it becomes impossible for the common man to live a day in his life without breaking at least one.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's like the legislation they passed making it a felony to peacefully protest within a certain mileage radius of the Secret Service in this country. I mean, it actually it's included in the legislation that you don't even have to know that the law exists to be, again, perceived as a criminal with criminal intent. So how do people around the world keep up with this, Vinny? Can you? Or is that the whole, is that the point, like you're suggesting?
Well, what they do is they push the envelope, and if people don't push back, then they push it some more. Okay? That's what they do. They play the long game. If we don't defeat it now, it'll get even worse. If we defeat it now and don't remain vigilant of them trying it again in the near future, then we may as well have just let them march on through in the first place. And it's very true. The Founding Fathers said that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And it's very true what Team America World Police said, that freedom isn't free. It costs folks like you and me.
And yeah, I love that movie, Team America, F yeah.
Well, that movie kind of illustrates basically the zaniness and the stupidity of what America's foreign policy has really turned into, doesn't it? And people all around the world are starting to, and I believe this is a deliberate campaign of the elite to get people to hate the United States. Like, I can't really put it down to anything. People in the United States just generally aren't that bloodthirsty, you know. They're quite generous and nice people, all the ones that I've met. And why all of this slaughter? Why all this depleted uranium contamination? And, you know, it just gets to the point where you start to recognize that all the political spectrum has become basically useless. Even if there is somebody good in there, like, let's say, Ron Paul, or in New Zealand, we've got an equivalent, Winston Peters. Even if they're in there, there's only so much they can do because the system is not set up to allow them to do what they want to do. And yeah. This is why Obama is trying to step over the Supreme Court, because the United States is supposed to have three branches of government. Because look, if you are solely able to come up with the plan, what if you've got a bad plan and you're just capable of pushing it through? You're going to mess everything up. What if you came up with a good plan and you went through another group of people and they checked on it and they said, you know, that's pretty decent. All right, sweet ass. What about another group of people on there just to verify, you know, just to triple check it? Mm-hmm. Okay? That's supposed to be the American system of government. What Obama's talking about is going like this. There's only one branch of government, and we rule you, and you have nothing you can do about it ever. We can make you disappear. If you are a Supreme Court judge, we can make you nullified. Nobody has more authority or anything else than I do. And I'm going to pass this on to the next guy in the next 4 years, of course.
Yeah, well, that's what we're seeing with the healthcare bill. I mean, this is pure intimidation and plain and simple. And that's not constitutional at all. Let's go for a moment to Lisa. She's on the line here. Hi, Lisa. You're on Green Wave Radio Live.
Hey. Hey, guys. Doing 2-for-1 special. That's great. Can you hear me okay?
It's a 2-for-1 special, and it goes for 2 hours, you know, because Chris is coming on my show for the first hour as well.
That's right.
I know. That's awesome. Well, this is going to be a good one because I have a Chris. You can blame Vinny for this question I have for you. It's because I was listening to his show and he had Lizzie Williams on last week, and it really piqued my interest because Lindsay Williams said the thing to watch is not the stock market, and I thought, well, yeah, obviously. He said what you want to watch in regards to when or if or when the shoe's about to drop with the economy is the derivatives market. And I thought, well, isn't that a rather opaque market that's difficult to, you know, average person analyze? So I wanted to see Mr. Expert on Finance, how one kind of keeps apprised of derivatives market, because, you know, that is that's the big weakness, that's the big elephant in the room, you know, from what I've read. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, but it's pretty tough to do. I mean, I would suggest even the experts really don't know what the risk is. In fact, you know, the derivatives markets, it's a multi-quadrillion sized market. They don't even know, I guess, is the answer to your question. I mean, from a basic level, I think you can watch things like interest rates. You can take a look at, like what Bank of America bonds are doing. You can try to look at the balance sheets of some of these companies, et cetera, but it's really not that transparent. We don't know. I mean, just right. Like in 2008 where the wheels fell off, and just like during the flash crash, when we wake up and the market's off 1,000 points in a few seconds. Supposedly they don't really know what caused it. That's what they tell us. Could have been a terrorist attack. Could have been the quant, trading systems. We don't know. So it's kind of a tough question to answer, to be honest with you.
Right.
Yeah. The derivatives crisis is kind of like this. You've got an enormous boulder and you're the Incredible Hulk. You throw that boulder upwards as far as you can, and it takes a very long time to come down. Mm-hmm. You don't know exactly when it's going to come down, and the first thing you see of it is going to be a shadow on you, and all of a sudden it'll be on you.
Yeah,
that's a really good description.
You know, we're talking about bazillions of quadrillions of mushy money. That's all up there that doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. It's not linked to anything real. They made it up. I can't believe these people are so horrifically stupid and
evil. They created the market under the guise of, okay, if these bonds, these certain instruments, go defunct or default, there's a backup in place.
Right.
But look at Greece, for example. I mean, it's completely defaulting, just like the United States. And they've changed the rules through the IMF, all this stuff. People aren't getting their money back. You're maybe getting 25 cents on the dollar or less. So these instruments that they created out of thin air aren't worth anything. It was just a market created so that the banks can profit off of instruments that most Americans don't understand. And it's gotten out of control. That's what the credit expansion has been. It's out of control. And now that they've lost control, we've run out of options. We're backed into a corner.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I didn't, it's hard to know much about the derivatives market because it is such a complex and mysterious thing, but thanks for that answer. Benny, can I give you something that you need to do a little research on?
Just give me a second. I need to say something first. Derivatives are like a magic trick. They're only mysterious when you first see them, but once they're explained to you, they make a whole lot of sense. Okay? It's when you call $1 $40 and you gamble it on the stock market at 1,000 to 1. That's derivatives.
Everybody hold on. Lisa, I'll let you get that question in when we come back. We'll be back in a few. I'm Christopher Green, Greenwave Radio Live.
He said, son,
have you... Hey, everybody, I'm Christopher Green. This is Greenwave Radio Live, broadcasting around the world, taking your calls. I'm here with Vinny Eastwood of The Vinny Eastwood Show. Stick around for the third hour. I'll be going on his program on American Freedom Radio. Also, we have Lisa here. Lisa, you had a question before the last break, I believe, for Vinny. You can go ahead and ask.
Sure. Vinny, your interview with Jordan Maxwell, it was really interesting. But I was, after you going on illuminating everybody about the wonders of Freemasonry, I was really surprised at his reaction. He didn't seem to have a problem with Freemasonry, and I thought that was really strange for somebody who had done so much research about the globalists. And so I thought, I'm gonna look into that. And from what I gather, and you need to go, you can do your own research. But I think there is a connection between him and P. Manly Hall. In other words, he either ascribes to Manly Hall's ideas or they were friends. So, interesting. I just thought that was really interesting.
Right, yeah. Well, see, Jordan gets around. He really does. He's very much like Freighter X and Freeman in that perspective. The people who research into the real deep, dark occult and everything, they mix with lots and lots of different people who would kind of freak any of us out. It's kind of like a different realm That's what I've come to know it as, is the sort of realm of occult awareness and dark occulted magic and knowledge that a lot of these guys are really deeply into. And I don't know how they maintain their sanity, much less a responsibility to a radio show or even copious quantities of the research that they do. But with Jordan, I have heard a lot of naughty, nasty things and what have you, but the problem is if you're going to pin somebody down, let's say as an agent of the other side or whatever, you need concrete proof, evidence that they've done something that's actually illegal kind of thing.
Right, well, but I would accuse him of that, but I just thought maybe he just doesn't have a problem with Freemasonry. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting.
Well, I don't particularly have a problem with Freemasonry. It just happens that a lot of the people who engage in scumbaggery are Masons. And it's not the Freemasonry itself that's the problem. It's actually the Scottish Rite, as Frater has pointed out. Back in the day, the Scottish Rite basically didn't really exist. It was a collection of all these works of these old dark occulted masters and blah, 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 and they got all this stuff. Normal Freemasonry is only 3 degrees, you know?
Right, that's true.
You know? And Scottish Rite is 33 degrees, so it promotes a huge amount of compartmentalization and a massive amount of concentration of power and influence within the lodges at the top, at the higher degrees. And there's a number of different Masons. For example, there's the political Masons, who are the ones who are in it for the power and the influence and what have you. Business Masons, who are in it for a few connections here and there. Porch Masons, who just want to go there to get away from their wives. Occulted Masons, who really are just all over the symbolism, just obsessed with it. And mathematical Masons, who for everything is numbers and Kabbalah and what have you. But yeah. Generally, they don't know all of it. They only know that they're one kind of space. And a lot of them don't recognize that the Freemasonry in itself, while it was originally conceived and designed and worked as a way of helping people to develop themselves as people and to have a little bit more insight into the way they all do through experiences of kind of shock, trust exercises. These are things we do in school now, I believe, kind of pioneered a little bit by the Masons. I don't know about the chronology here, but this is the thing. There's nothing inherently bad about the organization, ergo there's nothing inherently bad about the people within it. However, that doesn't excuse the fact that there are elements within it, just like there are elements in any society or any business or brand of radio or whatever the heck is going on. There might be an element of scumbaggery, but unless you nail down exactly who it is and what they've done, you don't really have the evidence to make a call about the organization as a whole, can you?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, not every banker is bad. You know, not every politician is bad, but, you know, the bad apples ruin it for everybody. Lisa, a question for you.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if you saw this today, but Obama intervenes in Augusta golf course dispute. He says that, I don't know if you caught it, but he says that women should be allowed a part of this private club. A private club. Says the White House spokesman said Thursday that the president believes that a golf club in Augusta, Georgia, 551 miles from the White House, should change its membership rules and admit women as members. And it says, however, Obama is trying to bolster support with feminist groups, partly because he's trying to maximize favorable turnout among women in the November election. Have any thoughts on that? Do you think it's political or?
That is, of course, you know, again, he's got to, you know, he's really, his job is to create as much tension between groups as possible, to create as much chaos as possible. I mean, that's been done. I mean, that's been talked about for a long time. Nothing ever comes of it. For Obama to do that, you know, it's just, you know, here we have the race war starting up because of the Trayvon Martin thing. And now we have to add, you know, the women's rights thing into the mix. It's ridiculous. My husband just got back from here yesterday. He should just stay from it. It's just it's something that we just don't need to touch. You're right. It's private. He's doing it politically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's ridiculous. It's one of the last mindless things to enjoy, that Americans have. Occasionally we need a break from the tyranny, and focusing on it. That's ridiculous.
Absolutely. We all need a break from tyranny, and that's why a lot of married men created an all-boys country club.
I'm a woman, and it doesn't bother me one bit. Women can have all women's groups, and, there's so many other things to be concerned about. It's just not well, I choose to be engaged in because I have no issue.
Yeah.
Really. They want to have that.
What's your opinion, Lisa? Do women get a fair shake in America today, in today's world? I hear a lot too that, people will tell me, women, a woman is a woman and she's got, should be a woman and a man should be a man. And I don't know, I'm kind of like getting to a question, but what do you think? Do women get a fair shake in America today?
I think that the gender roles have been incredibly confused and on purpose. That has its origins in the Tavistock Institute and, Mays and Lippmann and the creation of that propaganda machine that was channeled through the advertising houses and the media. I think there are differences between men and women. I think women, I'm not trying to climb the ladder, so I can't speak to that. But I think women have lots of freedom and lots of opportunities. And I personally don't want to be a man or try to compete with a man because we're so different. We have such different strengths and differences that there's beauty in difference. And mm-hmm. I personally believe that they're God-given differences and they fit together into a really nice puzzle if done in the right way. So it's the oldest narrative. It's just a diversionary technique. It's also a technique used to destroy the nuclear family. And I have a college education. I could do a lot of things professionally, but I chose a long time ago to make my primary occupation raising my children. And there are days when it's really hard. It's the hardest profession in the world, but it's the most gratifying in the long run if you can get past the need for, momentary gratification, which does not happen in parenting. So, it makes you grow up to be, it makes women grow up and learn how to be not completely self-centered. That's what parenting does for anybody.
That's really funny because I've occasionally stumbled across some extremely angry feminists on Facebook conversations, right? And, they get angry with me to be sure, and then I go look at their Facebook profiles, and I've been in a relationship for like 5 years, so I learn to give and take and to listen and to do stuff occasionally when you're told, it's part of going along to get along, because you've got to live together in a rather harmonious environment. You don't want to be too angry and you don't want to have your standards too high and what have you. It just promotes disharmony. But that's what these girls were doing to me. They were just basically turning every single word into some kind of attack on their sex and all of this kind of stuff. And surprise, surprise, they're single. And I've been in a relationship for 5 years.
Now we know why they're single. They're miserable and, trying to fit into a mold that they weren't created to fit in. And I'm not saying every woman has to stay home and wear an apron. But for those that do, they shouldn't be defiled for it. And again, I know you sounds really like I'm a super conspiratorial tinfoil hat wearer, but a lot of these agendas and these movements really were designed to create the breakdown of the family, because the family is the fundamental unit, the building block of a society. And without stable families, you can't raise, you can, but it's harder to raise healthy, emotionally balanced children.
And it's also a lot harder. It's also a lot harder to do that when one income is not enough to feed one household.
Well, that's what I was going to get to, too, because that's changed dramatically, the past decade. You know, women are making not only more money, but they're really taking over the workforce. And that's something I've seen, and I've talked with friends and family, too, just locally out here in Arizona. I'm sure we see it around the country. But we're seeing a lot of men out of work, a lot of men looking for jobs, you know, that were in those typical, you know, male roles. Maybe they were like, you know, some high-powered executive or, you know, finance guy or in the real estate business or a mortgage broker. He's out of his work, but now the wife is the breadwinner in the family. So we've almost seen a role reversal. But Vinny, you're right, too. I mean, it's tough to have that family nowadays when it really does, in most cases, take a two-earning couple to just, you know, maintain any kind of lifestyle in this country. It really is rare to have one person stay at home. It's kind of a luxury. And I agree with you, Lisa. You know, being a mom, obviously I'm not a woman and I'm not a mother, but I think that's the toughest job. I mean, that's the environment I came from. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and honestly, that's a tough job. And I think we need more moms like that. I think it's a good thing. So
yeah, my mom sacrificed absolutely everything for me in my life, eh?
Right. Well, and you know, yes, it is a luxury, but as Americans too, I think we have to really look within ourselves and be honest and say, if we're going to make the sacrifice to have a one income family, I mean, there's just whole different ways to do life. You can, I know a lot of women who stay home with a small business on the side, and that's never been more.
Oh, you're kind of breaking up there a little bit, Lisa.
Lost her.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, Lisa. Yeah, I think you're coming back in. You know, back
I'm
in.
I'm coming back. Yeah.
You're coming back.
I just want to say one more thing. I just want to say one thing. You know, I lived for several years within.
No, Lisa, it's breaking up too badly. I'm sorry.
You're going to have to give us a call back there, Lisa. Vinny, so yeah, it's tough being a woman, huh? Today's society. It's kind of a cool conversation. I like that we're talking about something different, which is really interesting because I think that dynamic and relationship has really changed. And getting back to the point too, why has that dynamic changed? Why is it that it was traditional, you know, nuclear family where the man was the sole breadwinner and that was kind of the image of 1950s America? Why has it changed where we now need a two income household? Well, I'll tell you why. It was all due to the credit expansion. It was all due to the expansion.
No, you're completely wrong, credit Chris. Cards.
What's your take? What's your take if you disagree?
The Rockefellers funded the feminist movement. It would simultaneously get all the women into the workforce so they could devalue the currency using that mechanism you were talking about, and get two forms of collateral to loan the government on. Okay, not to mention it would destroy the family because now that both sets of parents are off to work, there's nobody to raise the kids.
Yeah, well, it is. I would say there's truth to that. Certainly destabilization of the family unit. But it used to be where you could swing a mortgage, though, on one person's income. You know, it wasn't where people were buying these $500,000 or multimillion dollar properties. It's an unsustainable model. So it's really interesting to see how the families change. And I almost think we're taking a step back where people are almost wanting to go back to more of a familial structure. I don't know, Vinny. It's pretty interesting.
Well, in China, for example, now there's a new saying, get rich before you get old. Because now, with the one-child policy and all of that kind of stuff, you used to have that large family unit to take care of you in your old age. Doesn't exist anymore, and soon it won't exist for any of us either, because 70% of women who graduated from universities in the 1970s decided to not have children.
Yeah, everybody stay tuned. We'll be back in a few minutes. Green Wave Radio Live. Hey, everybody. I'm Christopher Green. This is Green Wave Radio Live. We're back. I'm here with Vinny Eastwood of the Vinny Eastwood Show. Stay tuned. I'll be on for the third hour right after this. Americans, meanwhile, are bracing for the next foreclosure wave. Half a decade into the deepest U.S. housing crisis since the 1930s, many Americans are hoping the crisis is finally nearing its end. We are right back where we were 2 years ago. I would put money on 2012 being a bigger year for foreclosures than 2010, said Mark Seifert, Executive Director of Empowering and Strengthening Ohio's People, a counseling group with 10 offices in Ohio. He says, quote, last year was an anomaly and not in a good way. In 2011, the robo-signing scandal in which foreclosure documents were signed without properly reviewing individual cases prompted banks to hold back on new foreclosures pending a settlement. Although foreclosure starts were 50% or more lower than for the same period in 2010, those that begun by a lot of these big banks were up 47% from 2011. Those of Wells Fargo's rose 68%, and Bank of America's, including BAC Home Loans, which, by the way, you know, acquired Countrywide, jumped nearly sevenfold, 251 starts versus 37 in the same period in 2011. So for those, you know, economists or pundits that tell you, you know, oh, the worst is over, the worst is over. Maybe in certain parts of the United States, maybe prices are kind of, you know, adjusting, even in places like Arizona. But the second wave is going to be bigger and more aggressive, Vinny. So we're definitely not out of the woods. What does the New Zealand housing market look like? Have you guys fared better than us? What's your take on that?
Oh, it's pretty nasty over here, eh? It's been really hard for a lot of people to find places to live. And the housing prices are so out of control that about 50% of the people in Auckland here, there's a report that's a few years old, of course, will never be able to afford to own their own home in the city. They'll be renting until they die, you know. It's pretty tragic, I think. And what's going to happen is all those people that have been making a heck of a lot of money in the markets and all of that kind of stuff, all of a sudden their money's going to be worthless. And unless they got some stored gold and silver to pay all their land rates and everything like that, these Agenda 21 officers and the Monsanto gig jackbooted goose-stepping thugs are going to come on and just take your property, take your farms, they're going to take everything. You know, I think, and this is the foreclosure that we've all long dreaded. You know, I was talking to this about a guy who had, like, young guy, you know, a builder, and he has, like, four properties. Because you've built them, and I said to him, mate, you know, they're gonna start amalgamating and just seizing all the remaining private property this year, and that's what I think is going to happen. All of this massive derivative debt, a lot of that's mortgages that have been unsold and stuff like that. So when they go, so does everybody's living spaces, and that's going to be the real hammer blow that Agenda 21 really needs to amalgamate all the remaining private property into the hands of the government, i.e. the banks, which are now one and the same. And they'll own everything, and they'll be able to reshape society as they see fit.
Yeah, it's amazing to think just how much society's changed and is changing, you know, right now. And I'm sure we've just seen the start of it. I mean, just look at, like, suburban America. I mean, that was an invention, suburbia, you know, to put the people, put the masses in, you know, in these areas, house next to house. I mean, if you go back to old school America, people would have laughed. I mean, the big deal was, let's get land, you know, let's so that we can till this thing and make a life for ourselves. But, you know, we look at places like Arizona, even locally, there's condos, townhomes that were selling for $250,000 at the peak, you know, selling for $50,000, $60,000 in parts not too far away from me. So I do think that there's some pockets maybe for, I guess, opportunity in these areas. I mean, I'm at least seeing some investors be able to cash flow on these properties, but it's literally been Armageddon. I mean, the regular Joe on the street has just been crushed by this wave of foreclosures and by really the decapitation of the credit markets and financing. I mean, very few people can even get a loan. If you owned anything the past few years, you're severely underwater. If not, you've short sold your home, you've been in foreclosure, you've strategically defaulted, something. So it really has just been a collapse of the entire credit system.
Yeah, yeah. And this is why I think people need to start, instead of occupying the public areas and where it's really hard to actually stay because, you know, the lack of facilities, showers, all that kind of stuff, the cold weather, occupy your homes. You know, if you're being foreclosed on, you know, there should be enough Occupy protesters or whatever to just come and live in your home, you know, because you're going to be out on the street anyway, you know.
Yeah, we're
occupy
seeing that
your
in
homes.
Detroit.
Stop all these foreclosures.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard of this kind of starting to happen a little bit more often, but I didn't hear about it happening in Detroit. Tell me more.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of information on it, but I did actually see a video. Luke Radowski, a We Are Change, you know, he's pretty popular, and he was meeting with some kind of nonprofit organization and members of OWS. I'm sure it's up on his archive, but yeah, they were showing houses that are just being occupied by regular people. And the thing is, the banks don't even want the homes because it actually costs them more money to foreclose on these properties that some of them are only worth like $5,000-$10,000 or something crazy like that. You know, Detroit, too, is just another example of how old America has really died. I mean, that was a huge manufacturing base. You know, the auto industry was there. That's where we had all these awesome American jobs, and that's dead. I mean, look at it now. You've got all these deteriorating homes that used to be these multi-million dollar mansions that you can buy for pennies on the dollar, but no one really wants to buy them because they don't have the money to fix them up. And you've got people literally occupying the real estate. That's something I think we could see happen. You know, maybe it starts in Detroit, but like you said, Vinny, moves to the rest of the country. Maybe you'll even see it out there in New Zealand as well. I don't know.
And I think it'll be a lot easier for occupiers, and it'll be a lot more long-lasting if they can do it indoors, okay? And simply doing it to prevent banks from foreclosing on people and kicking them out.
Yeah, well, you know? It's sad. It's a tragedy that people have had to.
But then again, there's so many. There's so many people that are being kicked out. How many millions of people have been kicked out of their homes since the 2008 financial crisis in America alone?
I don't have the exact number, but it's a lot of people. And that's the problem, is you've got all this inventory sitting, most of which has been trashed. I mean, you literally had people throwing concrete down the toilets and stripping the... I mean, we've seen this on multi-million dollar homes out here in the Scottsdale area where people lose everything. And so they totally destroy the home before they leave. I mean, they're taking out literally the kitchen sink. I'm not even joking. So that erodes the property value even further. And then it sits and rots on the market forever. And then you've got all these people that don't have a home. I mean, it almost makes sense to get a roof over these people's head, for crying out loud. But again, the banks won't help the people. We've helped them through bailouts and taxation on our backs. But to help the people, you know, they could have easily avoided this entire mess if they would have just allowed people to refinance at the height of the crisis and written down debt. If they had written down principal like we've done for the banks, by the way, well, we've already written down this debt to their benefit, not to mention, you know, the trillions of dollars worth of loans that have come from the Federal Reserve at 0%, so these banks, you know, can make money. Why can't we help the regular Joe on the street, Vinny? You know, why is it a moral hazard for you and me, but not for the billionaire banker?
Well, I think it's because the billionaire banker might be afraid of losing all that he has. He might also be afraid of the overcoming reality. I watched this movie last night called In Time with Justin Timberlake. You know, I was sitting down there watching it with my girlfriend. And it's basically based on the premise that in order for some people to be immortal, many must die. And very similar to just currency, because in that movie, time is the currency, you know, like it's 5 minutes for a cup of coffee or something like that. And the real currency that's going on here is for a few to be rich, many must be poor. But the irony is that the rich, for all intents and purposes, are gods now. You know, they've got that much power. They can walk around. They've got impunity from the law, first of all. So if they don't, if they have so much as a whim of not liking you, they'll kill you. You know, and
that's not
and
a joke.
Suffer no consequence.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a joke. That's what's scary. What are your thoughts on Breitbart? I know we're closing out a couple minutes. A reminder, stay tuned, because we'll be going another hour on Vinny Eastwood's program right after this. But Vinny, Breitbart, I don't know if I ever asked you that question. Do you think he was murdered? Do you think he was killed? Yeah.
The CIA has been in open sessions with congressional investigations and what have you with these little heart attack guns. They shoot a liquid bullet. It goes through your skin and it dissolves inside you and it gives you a heart attack. And the only thing that we saw is a little red mark, which if you didn't know exactly what you're looking for, just be like, oh, it's a little red mark. You know, there's no bullet wounds. There's no nothing out there. Must be a heart attack. So, you know, they've got the technology. And if Breitbart was planning to release some stuff, and this is why I advocate, don't remain secretive about stuff that if it went public would be very damaging. Release it as quickly as possible, because once it's released, there's no motive to kill you anymore because it's already too late.
Yeah, I wanted to mention this just on the heels of what we're talking about. I know we got a minute left, but Russia has a new zombie gun. I don't know if you read about this. One of our writers is actually working on this story right now, but basically it attacks your central nervous system, makes you a literal zombie. It can even drive you to suicide, quite literally. They're saying it's the equivalent of the new technology coming from Mr. Putin himself, is that it's like almost an atomic bomb that can be used on the people. Maybe we'll mention that when we come back to your show. Great show, everybody. Stay tuned. I'm on Vinny Eastwood next, so no need to change the channel. Give us calls. We'd love to hear from you. Great program, as always. Hard-hitting and in-your-face, America. We'll be back in a few. I'm Christopher Green. Talk to y'all later.
It's times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these time and time again.